This is the February 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee. John Zanker joins us from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Mike Zuzolo is here from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. And there now you can register for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It is the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday. And somebody from each of these organizations will be on hand, along with seven other analysts and the whole of the Agricultural Farm Doc team, ag economist from the University of Illinois, along with a representative of John Deere to talk, in his case, about the future of automation, artificial intelligence, and John Deere vision. Should be a great day. The cost is just $30, and that includes your morning cinnamon roll and coffee from the Beef House. They don't put those cinnamon rolls out because they don't usually have breakfast, but they're really fantastic. And, of course, the Beef House meal is great, too. Just $30 for the whole day. Register now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or willag.org. Bill Biederman, thanks for being with us today. Let's begin with you. What's on your list of discussion points?
I think the big thing for me looking at this report is we're still in a very tight old crop situation. And the reason is still because we continue to consume more than what we produce worldwide. In wheat, we consume 791 million metric tons. We produce 783, just shy of what we're consuming. Corn, the same thing. We're consuming 1,162 million metric tons versus 1,151 produced. And I think those numbers have been skewed a little bit to prevent any kind of hypertension or anxiety. And in the beans, it's a little bit more balanced. We actually consume 376. We produce a little more than that, 383. But until we get back to at least equilibrium to maybe a little bit of supply build, the market has to realize that if anything goes wrong in the next production cycle, it's, you know, Katie bar the door to the upside. And if we have normal responses by farm superiority and growing crops, we will be at a much lower price. We're in the middle. We're at a waiting period. I don't know the answer, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what these other guys have to say.
John Zanker, on your list of discussion points for the day?
Well, we've seen how explosive these markets can be over the past 2 years in particular. Can we do three? It's possible. Of course, but I think we haven't seen many of those in the last 40 years that I've been doing this. So I'm more concerned about La Nina transitioning into El Nino, which sets us up for potentially a huge breakout in yield. We're way past due. The last growing season we had that was nearly perfect from April 1st to September 1st was 2004. And we saw a huge yield surge that year. If we have something similar happen this year, even remotely close, we're going to take the carryout into a very burdensome level in a hurry. And the downside price potential, I think, is probably sharply lower than most people expect. So I think we'll have plenty of discussion today about how bullish things can be if we stumble on crop production. And I want to touch on how ugly things could get in case Mother Nature does a 180 here from what she's been doing and gives us a nice, long, good growing season.
Oh, and Mike Zuzolo, what's on your list?
Well, it's hard to top what Bill and John have outlined so far, Todd, but I guess I'll throw out there is what could a balloon have to do with the commodity markets? And I think that's the tease that I'll stick with right now.
Oh, I can hardly wait to come back to that one and see what it means. But I do want to turn back to you, Bill Biederman, because you, at the end of this, and I'm not sure that this is actually what you meant, but I want to double check, said we are in the middle right now, meaning the pricing middle, I think. Is that really what you meant to say?
Yeah, I believe that the market is in equilibrium in the fact that I believe that pretty much everything that we know on the table has already been traded. But the tipping point from here to finding out if we're going to have a smaller production out of South America or the United States versus the tipping point of a larger crop, the outlook formula for either side of those is insane. And I'll just give you a real quick idea. Not only would a smaller supply create a bigger deficit to consumption, which would have to be rationed out because we're already at pipeline levels, but we would also be moving the little economic factor called elasticity. And the elasticity of the market would also move. So that would, it would take a bigger move in price to get the same rationing effect if we went to a tighter supply. Now, the opposite of that would be true if we have the bigger supply, because the elasticity factor would relax. And so that would make buyers even put on their haunches even more. And it would be, you know, also negative when you look at fiscal policy around the world, because speculators who've been in an inflationary based position would go to a deflationary based position to get in line with fiscal policy. So both outlooks on either side of the, I would say it, we're sitting at the mountaintop peak, we're going to go one way or the other, could be argued extreme. And I don't like to be sounding like an extremist. I'm just saying that the outlook would be more dramatic than a more typical year.
So what you're telling me is, if you were to graph this out, the elasticity of demand would shift to the right if we had a smaller crop, meaning crop sizes in general, we'd shift that to the right, and that prices would go up higher faster on that smaller crop size. Why would it not actually move into the demand destruction area, which seems like it could be a possibility?
I think we've already done some demand destruction, and that's why we're not reacting to the little drop in supply that we've seen net out of South America so far. So I think that we've already traded that, and I think that given a standard deviation of X that we're trading for supply and demand, we're comfortable. But if you go past that standard deviation of maybe it's 5 to 7 million metric tons, which is probably what that deviation is right now worldwide. If we go beyond 7 million tons of either side of where we think it is or where USDA is saying, I think that would create a price response pretty quickly. But what I will say this, I think if you look at the USDA's numbers, I'm talking corn here, I think that they are underestimating, no question, the world demand. For the first time in statistical history, they have actually lowered the non-major demand users of corn. Rather than a steady increase in demand, they've reduced that demand, which is kind of unbelievable, but that's what they did. And so I think they're underestimating demand. And then when you look at Argentina production versus what the private trade estimate is saying, along with saying with Brazil, they probably are overestimating a little bit of the world production. So I'm saying that they're probably 5 million tons off on a world basis net. That's just a little bit within standard deviation, in my opinion.
Mike Zuzlo, you mentioned a balloon, what it has to do with price, and I figure it actually really has to do with China and their demand. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's spot on. I mean, Todd, what we've noticed here, and this ties really nicely into what Bill was talking about, is that what we've really noticed here is that you can't get around China and commodities and emerging markets all being tightly woven together, especially on supply-led markets like we've had here, like we had in 2008, like we had in 2012, not demand-led markets like we had from essentially 2003 to 2006-07. And what we're talking about now, I think, is the emerging markets coming out of the zero COVID. They've had the bounce, but now with this issue with the spy balloons getting bigger and bigger, and it does seem like in the news as we go to air here that this is a bigger issue than probably most people thought it would be, that it really does call into question our trade policy, our geopolitical policy with one another, and our trade policy with China specifically, and if that's going to get hurt or not. And I think Brazil and corn are an excellent example. And I think the trade's very much in tune with that, that the Chinese made a concerted effort to buy Brazilian corn. They changed their rules to be able to do it. And I think this is going to be the feature that we're going to have to deal with until we get to what Bill's talking about, a demand-led market. If it's supply and weather-led, it's going to probably be scared of its own shadow until it sees a need to ration demand and cut it off at its legs because of something that has to do with weather. And one other point about what Bill was talking about, I am starting to look a lot more, especially in the corn market, kind of like what he's talking about. I'm looking a lot more at the ending stocks of major exporters versus a year ago, because that's been the negative sentiment in this market. It wasn't a weekly export sales again on Thursday. And wheat, essentially major exporters, have 5 more million metric tons than they did a year ago of ending stocks. Corn, 1.5, beans, plus 4. I think that corn can go from a plus 1.5 to a negative 1.5 to 2 because of Ukraine and Argentina.
So you think the Argentine weather problems, the war in Ukraine, will cause for the 2023-24 marketing year, maybe before that begins even, a supply issue?
Yes, and I think that's where we may be in the pull position. If the demand holds up and is strong and we don't go into a problem with China, we find ourselves in finally getting a large chunk of the world corn demand. And I think that's the metric I'm going to use for the cash side of the markets, whether to store corn or beans, at this stage of the game.
John Zanker, you've been listening to this. Anything to add?
Well, yes, great points by both Mike and Bill. And I think it suggests that we certainly have some crazy stuff on tap if we come up short, if the Argentine crop continues to dwindle. The Brazilian second crop is going to be planted a little bit later than they would like. 2 years ago, it was planted late, and it turned out to be a catastrophe for them. They didn't get it pollinated before the hot and dry set in. So that's something to take or keep a close eye on. This transition from La Nina to a light El Nino could give us a wet spring and a slow start there. So that could be a bullish impetus. But a light El Nino has tended to be very conducive to good yields here in this country. So I like what Bill was talking about earlier, and being in the middle. I could see $10 corn, and I can see 4.25 to 4.50 corn in the fall. We are way past due for a big yield breakout, and 2004 was the last time that happened. And about a 12.8% increase over the previous record, and the previous record was the previous year. So we're way past due for that. If that would occur, if we match that 12.8%, which might be one in the 500-year type of thing, but if we did match that, that's 199 national yield. But let's back that off and say 190, and we end up planting 92 million. And a year ago, you know, we were pretty bearish on corn acres. We thought they'd come in under 90 due to high fertilizer prices going up into the spring. This year, they're coming down. So I wouldn't rule out maybe 92 million acres of corn. And if you put 185-90 bushel yield on that nationally, we're talking about a carryout that could be pushing 2.5 to 3 billion. And we've just seen a massive collapse in natural gas prices from this summer, which I think is one of the biggest commodity stories of the past 10 to 20 years. It was a reminder, in the commodity business, some ugly things can happen, and they don't tend to happen when we're well prepared. So we're going to work hard here in the coming weeks and the months to get our customers set up for maybe a hard push to the downside if some certain things line up wrongly.
I think I need to ask this at this point, and this is just sort of a short answer question, I hope. I believe all of you are telling me that at the price levels and the fundamentals we have at this point, you are looking for a very big move, potentially, in either direction once it starts to go. Is that what I heard from you, Bill?
Yes, it is. And you know, as a result, if you look at your profitability of farming right now, it would be okay if you had, well, for most of the people we've run this analysis for, if you had a smidge over 50% of your 2023 upcoming crop hedged and the market went down, you would still remain profitable as a farm by fall on your total production with about 55% of your crop sold with options bought against it. So we're figuring the cost of the options and the interest of holding and everything. And if the market went up, your farm would make a lot more money if the market went up. But if it went down, you're going to be profitable. Now, take that against the guy who says, well, there's no way I'm going to sell over 50% of my crop not knowing what it is. We wouldn't either in a cash contract because we don't want to be committed to delivery. But if you didn't manage that equity or I should say income exposure and you just hang on and the market does do the down, you probably would not last 2 years financially. That's our analysis. So why not sleep at night and enjoy an up market if it happens? And if it doesn't happen, you, your operation, your family are protected.
Completely on board with the move either way. I think what I could say too, to add to what Bill and John were saying, was we've had about a $10 to $13 range in crude oil since December. And I think what we're talking about for me, Todd, is can the emerging markets, i.e. China, pick it up on the demand side, and those tight supplies matter again? And I think that's really the bottom line. And that's what would make us naturally, in my mind, give us the big move up. The big move down would be a China-led pulling out of demand. I don't see that as likely in the front end, in corn especially, because there's not a lot of competitors out there. But I also feel as though that, and this is getting a little wonky, but we're getting a treasury yield curve that's inverting, where the two-year yield is a lot higher than the 10-year, and that's not normal. And when you get that, you tend to see a recession ahead. It's a good predictor, historically, I stress, of a recession. And it's the deepest inversion right now since the 1980s. And I think that's where the demand side of the equation needs to show up relatively quickly, or I do fear that it's going to be negative demand side. And if the weather changes, we break harder.
And John Zanker, I'll put the same question to you, but add the crop insurance caveat. Let's say that it is a $5.90 corn price for crop insurance. That was where we are today, roughly speaking, for the December contract. How do you use it, and how do you see yourself protecting customers to the upside and the downside both? I know you've talked a little bit about this already.
Well, we would certainly, I guess the simple answer there from an insurance standpoint is load up, you know, go heavy. This is not a good time to lighten up. You certainly don't want to be caught in one of those years where you might have somewhat of a localized drought, but the rest of the country does well, and boom, you're caught with a low price on the back end for the crop insurance. And, you know, maybe at a 75 or 70% coverage level, it's not going to be good. So go heavy on the crop insurance. And again, just another thing there that says I'm going to be prepared for either direction, and either direction could be sharp. You know, the inflation thing, Ukraine, if the war ends, that's going to be bearish corn and wheat, especially for a little while. But I think the world economy will blossom soon after that war ends. I think this economy right now is stronger than most people thought it would be. The fourth quarter GDP number told us that. The employment numbers were stunning last Friday. So, you know, we have some things going for us. But I think as we go on, the Fed's pretty clear. They're going to continue to fight inflation. And You know, we could get into late summer before we go into recession, but Europe, I think, will lead. We'll follow. And if we have a 185 bushel crop sitting in the field at the same time and following a good crop in Brazil, again, we're potentially heading to that 4.25 area. And as Bill talked about, boy, that's just going to be really rough on income. In 2014, we had probably a close to a perfect growing season here in the Eastern Belt. Iowa, Eastern Iowa, especially Minnesota, parts of the Western Corn Belt, had a pretty rough, dry August, and their yields fell off. But in that year, we saw prices decline sharply after some pretty good prices in 11, 12, and 13. And boy, it was stunningly scary on how quickly some people got into financial trouble, probably led by our equipment dealers, and got stuck with some really quickly depreciating old, used inventory. So again, those are things we have to keep in mind. We've been riding high. And again, 3 years in a row, that's pretty tough to do in our business. So we need to be very cautious and get ourselves protected in every possible way against sharply lower prices potentially.
Turn your attention, Mike Zuzulo, to the old crop soybeans. USDA and the WASD raised the season's average cash price by 10 cents. I believe it's $14.30 across the nation now. Farmers have about 70% of their crop marketed, I believe. Should they let the rest of it go?
If the soy meal gives up, yes. And if the July-Nov bean spread, I think, breaks below around 130-ish on a weekly close, those are the best indicators I could give you at right now, Todd. I think the report did a lot of good in supporting the analysis that the funds, the market, bought into the meal because of Argentina weather and skipped the corn this time around. And in their circular, WAOB talked specifically about the meal and the fact that the soybeans in Argentina are going from an export market to an import market. And so I think that's, you know, pretty conclusive that the meal is the leader. It's got a reason to be the leader. And so just take it at face value is what I would say. And, you know, obviously if we could get back up to that $15.90 to $16 level in March or May beans, I think that's where I would finish up with the last 15% I'm holding, you know, on a nice strong rally. Otherwise, if the meal and the July Nov bean spread give up, I'd start looking at the finishing up the old crop.
Yeah, and of course, Bill Biederman, you have to think about storage cost. If it's in either the bin, that'd be an interest payment, which is much higher because of the interest rates at this point. I want to say, like, what is it, 25 or 30 cents to hold it 3 or 4 months now just on the interest? So when you take all this into account, where do you stand on those old crop sales left to be made?
Well, I agree with what Mike said. You know, you get one more push and it's probably not worth holding on to. And if you did want to maintain ownership, you'd take advantage of the premium and you'd replace it with an option. And who cares if you spent, you know, 30, 40 cents, you're still buying it at such a discount out into the summer that you've absorbed most of that cost. So you'd be pennies ahead is what I'm saying, in cash flow ahead. So that, you know, that's pretty obvious when you just look at the numbers. I think if what Mike was saying is that the meal is the key to being bullish, and of course weather production in South America is key. But like, if this thing starts to go south on us, like I was checking with one of the guys that the guys we're associated with, they trade cash and they trade freight and they trade all kinds of things. And I was talking to the oil trader today, and he was saying that right now Brazilian oil is like 800 cents cheaper than US on world market. And he said if you go out to, like, I think he was saying May, and I can't, don't take me, you know, being quoting him perfectly accurate because I'm not, but he was saying something like if you go out a few months, they're like 1,000 below us. So, I mean, there is such huge discounts out in the product market in the world to us that if we lose the meal component of this bull, that $15 bean could evaporate really quick. And yet at the same time, if you're a buyer, where are you going to be buying beans? here in the United States. I mean, the world is a whole different picture, but the United States is still a question of, well, where am I going to get it? And I don't know the answer to that.
And given that, I want to turn, John Zenker, your attention to the acreage. We'll get some numbers from the USDA Ag Forum in February, and then, of course, we'll get the farmers' take on it in the prospective plantings report at the end of March. We keep hearing that farmers probably are going to try to plant more corn acres. Do you think that will really be the case?
Well, when we were looking at $14 November beans and $6 corn, you know, a month ago or so, and where fertilizer prices were, I saw some value in $14 soybeans, and I was a pretty active seller at that level for the new crop. But we've seen fertilizer prices slide quite a bit, and there may be some more downside in that. So I think that you know, you just may flip back a little bit from where we were last year. We got a lot of field work done in the fall. We got some anhydrous down. I can see corn acres. I'm not in that 94 camp. I've seen that number tossed out, but I could see 91, 92. So an increase, you know, 3 to 4. And again, that concerns me. if we get to the field early and we have a great growing season, that yield could be substantially better than what most people are prepared for. So I'm going to go with probably 91.5, 92 million acres right now.
Mike Zuzulo, will farmers in the Western Corn Belt, your part of the world, add corn acres? And is that because of a basis-driven marketplace where you've been short of corn?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. I think the basis is what's going to drive us out here, Todd. And I think I was just in Western Kansas, where a lot of irrigated corn west and north of Garden City, and a lot more than I thought. It looked a lot like South Central Nebraska and Western Illinois, quite honestly. And I think those people out there have made a concerted effort towards corn the past few years. I talked to one fellow that said that the high pro wheat that they grow out in that area, the cost of production because of nitrogen and because of some of the other things, they actually are only about $30 an acre difference from growing corn, and that pretty good corn given it's irrigated. So, I mean, I'm kind of ambivalent on, you know, what they're going to choose in terms of until I see their basis levels. If their basis levels are $1.30 over like they are in Garden City, Kansas right now, they'll probably, you're right, go after more corn because it's being shipped from Illinois, essentially, whether it's, you know, Jacksonville or up by Morris and Rochelle. It's coming our way right now, from what I can understand. I did talk to a Nebraska client because there was speculation that Nebraska farmers would go after more corn because of disappointing bean yields last year. And the ones that I've talked to so far are saying, no, that's probably not what I'm going to do because the basis is not there yet to be able to make me go after corn. So it's going to be a question mark there. And it's going to be a question mark in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio because of those big increases in soft red wheat. And that's going to go after bean stubble. So that's going to take some corn acres away as well.
Bill Biederman, what is the northwest part of the United States leaning towards? Did they put more wheat in the ground?
Well, I think the corn acres will be strong just because the profitability of the corn was pretty good. But, you know, we are hearing a lot of people that are contemplating the idea of betting on the future and putting in a little bit more oil seed on the idea of biodiesel plants being built, as well as barley, because the barley market is just on fire over there. So it's a hard call. I know that where I have some interests up there, it's probably going to be maintained mostly corn and soybeans. We're not going to go with wheat.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I'll start with you, John Zenker, at Risk Management Commodities.
Well, I think we've certainly heard some exceptional comments and ideas from the group today, and I think we're in agreement that we're going to see a breakout in price. And as is often the case at this time of the year, it can certainly move in either direction. It could move hard in either direction, but there are so many factors currently. Will Putin shut down Ukrainian exports again. We haven't touched on that. That's a possibility. Will the war suddenly end? That's a possibility. Doesn't look like a great possibility at this point, but again, we're just going to see things pop up in here that we're not really well prepared for, potentially. So, my concern again is that, you know, as we shift from a, three-year El Nino or three-year La Nina into a, mild El Nino, that sets up the potential for a very good crop here in the United States. If it gets stuck, a neutral ENSO, by the way, I believe is where we were in 2012. So that throws out the big drought potential. Not many meteorologists are currently looking at that. But again, let's be very cautious moving forward in our plans and you know, be making some good, strong business decisions, which are a little bit different than trying to hit one over the fence from a marketing perspective. $15 beans, old crop, still a pretty good price historically.
Mike Zuzula, GlobalComResearch.com, your final word for the day?
Yeah, kind of button it up. And John, what he just said is just perfect from my standpoint. But, you know, the report fundamentals plus the macro issues plus the cash basis, to me, Todd, suggest, generally speaking, broad brush, May corn and bean puts at this point, and working from a standpoint of protecting for the downside if that downside looks like it's going to be opening up, and give yourself something going into planting, going into the March 31st acreage base.
And Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net, your final word.
Okay, the 70s, I think we're going to repeat history. In 1973 through 4, we saw Russia come in as the first-time importer of U.S. grains, and the price of corn rallied 142%. The 70s started off an inflationary period, followed by fiscal policy to bring that under rein. In the 80s were the absolute worst time in the world to be a farmer financially. And if you didn't manage it right, you missed the buying opportunity of your lifetime in land, and you probably have regrets. Oh, that's me, by the way. Fast forward to right now, 2021, China came in as the first time big buyer of U.S. corn. Corn rallied 158% during that time period versus 142% when Russia bought. Almost the same thing, followed by an inflationary period, followed by fiscal policy to restrain inflation. Oh my gosh, this sounds like a repeat. Point being is this: if you manage your income and collateral risk over the next couple of years, you might be able to get participation in a buying opportunity for land that I missed out during my time. This could be your chance in your career lifetime to take advantage of it. So the point of that is manage your income and collateral risk very, very carefully over the next 2 years to set yourself up to take advantage of what maybe could come.
The good news on that point is that I have asked Gary Schnittke this question many times over the last 5 years, and farmers have been managing very, very well their bottom lines and what they actually have paid, at least to this point, for farmland. I don't know that he would agree with the last 6 months, but the previous 3 to 5 years, as on a capitalized value, well under what the farmland might have brought, and farmers have been holding the line on that. On that note, thank you all for joining us. John Zanker is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Bill Biederman is with AgMarket.net in Spring City, Tennessee. And Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.